Bonjour, bienvenue. Hello, everybody. How are you?
Bonjour. Hello, everyone.
Good to meet you, Pierre-Yves. Thanks for being here. Before we start, just a very short introduction to the podcast. So this is the CoPC podcast of the Conflict Transformation, Peacebuilding, and Security Network. We are a large group on LinkedIn. There are about almost 45,000 people on that group. And also on Facebook and other groups on Twitter. The largest group is on LinkedIn, so please join if you're not yet there, if you want to follow the activities and exchange with peers in the peacebuilding community. We put the link in the presentation of the podcast. And we are producing this kind of podcasts on peacebuilding in a large sense today with Pierre-Yves Monnet on the peace agreement regarding Mali from 2015. We're going to talk about this more in details. And maybe let me present you very shortly. It's really a big pleasure and honor to have you here, Pierre-Yves. You were federal mediator of Belgium, which is ombudsman, actually, to put in an English term and precisely.
It's
About
and in the French-speaking Africa, they call it Médiateur de la République.
Exactly. For almost 10 years. And you are still international expert on mediation, and particularly you were a member of the UN mediation standby team that was delegated to the special representative of the Secretary General during the Malian peace process in Algiers, right, from 2014 to 2015. That's the so-called peace and reconciliation agreement in Mali resulting from the Algiers process, to be precise.
Exactly. And I was there already in 2013 for the mise en œuvre, the implementation of the Ouagadougou agreement we're going to talk about as well.
Exactly. Thanks. And you also wrote a couple of books, I think two or three or four. So I will just show one here. It's most related to what we discussed today. So it's a mediation guide, a manuel de médiation for the prevention, management, and resolution of conflicts. So that's a book published by yourself.
Now it's published by the Folke Bernadotte Academy in Sweden.
Right. And authored by you, that's what I wanted to say.
Exactly.
And a couple of other books that are also available that can be found in different stores. And also I wanted to mention that since you were very closely involved and in this mediation process, and some things might be maybe a bit political or sensitive, so that may be to all my questions you might not reply in 100% detail, so that's up to you, of course, but I'm sure our auditors will understand if for some questions you might have some limitations due to your function, of course.
Okay.
Good. Before we start, maybe put all this a bit, little bit in perspective. So I have a map here for Mali. So here is where it's located on the African continent, and then here we have a map of Mali. So it's let's say more or less northwestern Africa. I don't know if you want to say something about it in terms of, I don't know.
Well, it's a member of the ECOWAS sub-regional African organization. That's the sub-regional organization for Western Africa. So Mali is a member of it. As we speak, it is partly under sanction of ECOWAS since the coup. And it's very important also to understand Sahel, to understand Mali, that to be able or to be aware that this country is on the Sahelian strip. For those who are not very comfortable with those notions, the Sahel is known by everyone. It's a west-east, east-west desert strip, and that's where you find the northern part of the country. And the Sahel, that's not the Sahara, the Sahel is a southern strip. It's a semi-desertic. So Mali is partly on Sahara and partly on Sahel, which means that the in the very south of the country, where you see Sikasso, it's already the tropical Africa, or it starts to be the tropical Africa. So three different climates means three different way of lives, means it's a huge country, means population not having the same daily life, as we could say. Mm-hmm. That's important for to understand the conflict in Mali.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks for these positions. And also regarding the history, so obviously we're not going to go into the details, but just to give a very short resume of the history. So we can say that Mali was a French colony from 1880 to 1960, then followed the dictatorship until the 1991. And after that, we can call it a democratic transition. By the way, I found the term how local people in Bambara called democracy, the word they use in Bambara language for democracy, which is Beijing Fanga. So, and literally translated means power of all. A very nice translation and way of putting democracy. Then there was a military coup in 2012 and a civilian transitional regime that followed on that. So the coup actually led to this civilian transitional regime. And then we had the French Serval operation, also very important as of January 2013, which was replaced by Barkhane operation, which was larger as of 2014.
It was under UN
Under UN, exactly.
Under UN authorization, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was the election 2013 and also the Ouagadougou agreement in 2013. You already mentioned it. And then the peace treaty we're going to talk about today, the agreement 2015, came two years after that election in 2013. And later on today, the situation got a bit more complicated again. We had the military coup in 2020, 2021. And then 2022, the last developments is that the Russians and especially the Wagner group entered the country. And at the same time, it's the end of Barkhane and the EU mission as well. So that's the last developments. But let's maybe go back to this 2015. So that would be also the first question to you. So we had a difficult period and some sparkling of democratic transition, then again, military coup, which led to civilian transitional regime. Then the election 2013. So why actually 2015? What made the conflict ripe at that moment for mediation for the agreement?
Well, the answer is in 2013. The answer to your very question is in 2013. It's the so-called Ouagadougou Agreement that is officially a preliminary agreement. That's the name, the preliminary agreement of Ouagadougou. And it was a deal. We go back to the civil rule, the constitutional order. So we organize election after the coup, and the rebel groups that signed that preliminary agreement of Ouagadougou agreed to let the state and to cooperate to the organization of those elections in the part of the country that they were ruling. And in exchange, the government of Mali promised to go back to an agreement that will be the final agreement. I mean, to go back to the negotiation leading to a final agreement on the very question of the North Mali. So it was a deal. We go back to constitutional order. And once this is done, and that explains the election of 2013 that followed the signature of the agreement of 2013 in April. And then once the new president will have been elected, Mali is going to return with the rebel groups to a final negotiation. And this negotiation started in July 2014 and eventually developed into the agreement, the so-called peace and reconciliation in Mali agreement issued from or resulting from the so-called Algiers process. Mm-hmm. And signature took place in May and June 2015. So that explains why things were ripe. Actually, it was per steps. It was made per steps since 2013 until 2015.
So we could call the Ouagadougou agreement some kind of pre-mediation step, setting the framework, you know, getting things ready, prepare the ground for the follow-up.
Yeah, although it was already a mediation. But it was, yes, it was a really a first step. That's what it's called, preliminary. It's the first part of a two-part process, you could say.
Yeah. Perfect. So let me share, maybe since we talk about the agreement 2015, so that everybody can have an idea of how such an agreement looks like. I will share the link also in the description. It's available on peacemaker.un.org, which is, by the way, a great resource for peace building and mediation.
Indeed.
So that's how it looks like. It's the original. The scan is not really perfect, far from that even, but just to visualize it, how it looks like. So there is the preamble, then the different titles, different chapters. What are these paragraphs actually here on each page?
Yeah, and that's why you see on the top of each page it's written paraffé. So it's not yet the signature, it was the paraffé. And by the way, this was a very difficult moment because the paraffé does not exist in the Tuareg culture. And so the Tuareg groups, or at least the CMA, refused to paraffé it. Not only because the paraf did not exist, meaning if we paraf, that means that we sign it, that we accept it, but also because the international mediation decided to stop the negotiation on the 1st of March 2015 to freeze the discussion and to put the text that was under discussion until then to the paraf of the participants. And this very event provoked the collapse of the negotiation and the CMA, which is the anti-government rebel group, so a key party to the agreement, mm-hmm. left Algiers, so we were in a very dramatic situation where we were not far from a collapse of the agreement itself.
I guess it, so this is actually the two signature events, right? May and June, is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I see.
And there we are in March, and the idea is between March and May to try to save the agreement, even between March and June, to save the agreement, because the CMA ultimately came back to the table only in June, which then saved the agreement, and we had the second signature of the agreement, this time only with the CMA and the government. And so that's why you have two signatures. First, it's the platform and the government, and that was in May. The platform was called the pro-governmental rebel groups, although it's quite a shortcut to say that, and even today, I mean, it's very different. The platform and the CMA are pretty much on the same line today, but it was not the case in 2015. And then in June, you had another official signature between the government and the CMA in presence of the platform. The platform had already signed and the government had already signed as well.
Okay. So there was just an additional signature that...
Nothing changed in the text. Nothing's changed in the text.
Obviously,
They signed the same text, but the CMA gave a certain conditions that were put into writing in Algiers before they sign. And by the way, the government did the same thing. They gave a reluctance provisions in March, April already. So they both signed, but having put some caveats, expressed some difficulties in some part of the agreement. Mm-hmm. So it was a way to get them signing the agreement and at the same time expressing the difficulties they had, both the government and the CMA, in signing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so keep the process going, as we say, yeah?
Exactly.
Whatever happens, all the ups and downs, you know, all the circle, the good times, the bad times, and keep the process going.
And so some people could say, well, what is the meaning of signing an agreement and parallel telling the international community and the international mediation that you have so much reluctancy and difficulties with such and such and such and such provisions? Why do you sign it? Well, you gave the answer, to keep the process moving, to prevent the bicycle to stop running and to fall on the ground. That's really a key part of any mediation.
Exactly. Yeah, so here that's the agreement. There are about 42 pages here in the scan with all the appendixes and then the signature
and you see, and so on. And you see on the top of the pages now it's written sign on the 15th of May.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they re-put the two documents in one to make those slides.
Yeah. And there's also, I'll also put in the description, there's a cleaner version of it. On the website peaceagreements.org. So this one is much more readable. It's all in French, obviously, but at least this is more readable if somebody's interested in going into details about the agreement.
This agreement has been translated by, I think it's by the German and by US Ed, into 14 local languages. Yeah. But, okay. but not in English. Which is obviously not a local language in Bangladesh.
Great. So this was done, I guess, to inform the population as widely as possible. That was the purpose.
Well, that's the key element. It's the buy-in of the population, and which, by the way, did not take place. It's not by translating an agreement in a country where even in local languages, even in 14 local languages, where in a country where 80-85% of the people cannot read, it's not the way. I mean, it was a nice effort and I salute it, but the appropriation of the agreement is something that has never really been done. And we are 7 years later, and many people don't know the agreement, don't support it, and don't support it because they believe whatever they are made believe by social medias. And since no one knows exactly what is the agreement, what is in the agreement, it's very easy for bad intention people to make believe that the agreement is saying such and such and such, which is not the case. And then so
the rumors ongoing as well.
Exactly. And then you provoke a reject of the agreement. And as we speak, this reject of the agreement has reached a peak, especially with the transitory government led by a prime minister who is known and who has always been known since 2015 to be a very strong opponent to this agreement. So we are in a very difficult situation at the moment.
Yeah. So that makes me think about the Lederach pyramid, you know, the top level and the interdependency gap between the grassroots and the middle. Yeah. Middle management, middle society, and the top leaders who are, you get the nice pictures of signatures, but you don't know how much it is supported on the lower levels and the grassroots.
And especially since the process of the Algiers process was a pure top-down process. And so there has not been a bottom-up approach of the agreement. And as I say, even 7 years later, there was no real appropriation work. And this is highly needed. And I'm really trying to convince actors in Mali, even 7 years later, better late than never, to launch this process. And the Ministry of Reconciliation and the Marne, which I'm working with, Mécanisme d'appui à la réconciliation nationale, are very aware of the need for this agreement, if we want to save it, to be better appropriated, to be better understood by the population.
Mm-hmm. And I guess most people don't see any peace dividend coming out of this.
Well, that's another problem indeed. There is no peace dividend because the agreement has not been implemented. Mm. So the agreement is not dead. If it was dead, I believe that Mali would very, very immediately enter into chaos. Mm. So it is not dead. The bicycle is still running extremely slowly, you know, like, wow. But still moving.
Who keeps it straight there? Because it's, you know, it's a very slow bike, either falls right or left. So who keeps the balance?
Some people will tell you it's the parties are afraid to appear of the one having killed the agreement, so no one wants to kill it. And the problem is that playing this very dangerous game means we are honestly approaching the moment when the bicycle will fall. What is needed is really to say, okay, we resume the meetings, the implementation meetings, because even the implementation meetings and le comité de suivi de l'accord, CSA, the implementing follow-up committee, which is led by Algeria and the international community in presence of the signatories parties, this committee has not met since October, and normally it meets every month, not to do the job, just to follow the job and
keep the process going.
Keep the process going, and in between those monthly meeting, the government and the parties are implementing. That's how it should work. Mm. But
so you said October last year, right? 21.
Exactly. So not only the CSA is not gathering anymore because there is no work to be presented to the CSA and the work is not done. So yeah, you could ask why has the bicycle not yet fallen? And the reason is, as I said, no one wants to appear to have make it fall. And at the moment it changed, it might have changed during the 7 year history of this agreement, but as we speak, we can quite objectively say, and I'm not saying it, L'Observateur Indépendant, which is a very unique institution created by the agreement, giving to an independent authority the mission to follow the agreement and to say what is going good, what is going bad, and when it's going bad, who has caused this? So even to identify why and who, which is unique in the peace agreement, to my knowledge. It's the very first time that such a peace agreement has created an institution.
Is it defined in, it's in the agreement, huh? There's a chapter
on
that.
It is in the agreement, in the very last articles of the agreement. Yeah. And it's the center, Jimmy Carter Center, who is playing the role of Observateur Indépendant, chosen by the party. And in its last report, it's a 4 month report, every 4 months, it's clearly says that the government has no appetite, obviously, to implement the agreement since the transition, since the military transition that we are experiencing at the moment, since August 2020. And we are in a situation where the movement, the other signatories, the platform and the CMA are really willing to go and to implement the agreement. The government is quite divided. It's not a government as we can imagine in Europe, with a prime minister defining a policy and all ministers agreeing on that policy, which would be the president's policy, and we go forward in this direction. That's not how it works. The prime minister is publicly opposed to the agreement, but you have even members of the CMA, the signatory anti-government rebel groups, that are sitting in the government, and they are obviously in favor of the agreement. So it's a very ambiguous situation, but the risk exists really that at the end the bicycle might stop, and other actors would be extremely happy if the bicycle stops, and that is the jihadists who are just waiting for that. So we are really playing with fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned jihadist groups. So maybe if we can have just some overview of who are actually different actors. So you mentioned, because all the listeners might not be aware of Mali, the situation, the actors. So that you mentioned the CMA, obviously the government. So approximately, what are the main actors?
So the government is the government of Mali, and there is a continuation. So each government, even after the coup, is supposed to endorse what has been signed by the previous government. That's the principle of continuity of the state. So that's the government of Mali. And then you have a CMA, la Coordination des Mouvements de l'Azawad, CMA. And those were the so-called anti-government rebels. Three rebel groups that already signed separately, not yet in coordination, the preliminary Ouagadougou agreement. MNLA, HCUA, MAA. They formed the CMA, Coalition of the Azawad Movement. And then you have the so-called pro-government at that time, rebel groups, the Platform. Mm-hmm. As we speak, 7 years later, Platform and CMA are quite on the same line, more or less. And those are the three signatories, parties of the agreement. The political opposition in 2014-15 and the civil society are what I would call the forgotten actors. And it is because the opposition was not involved in this process. The prime minister today was in the opposition at that time. That there is a very weakness in this agreement. And had we integrated the opposition, what we rarely do in Africa during a peace process, had we done it, things could have changed today, and maybe we would not have a government or a prime minister opposed to the agreement. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to the civil society, they have been invited in Algiers 3 days. Each party was inviting its civil society, so we had three civil societies, but it was, honestly, it was more to tick the box. Okay, civil society has been granted the right to give their opinion than anything else. So
because it's part of the good principles. For instance, exactly. I just put it for people who are interested. So that's also an interesting book.
Yeah, guide, exactly.
The UN guidance. So they tick the box because it's part of the.
Yeah, but it remained to be seen as a pure bottom up. Approach the Algiers process not as a top down, as a top down and not as a bottom up. And this bottom up approach still needs to be done by explaining the agreement today, 7 years later.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of work still to be done on that level.
A lot of work to be done.
Let's talk a little bit about the preparation of such a process. Maybe first. Personally, as a mediator, how does that work? How can we imagine? Are you at home, you know, maybe eating dinner, and suddenly the UN Secretary General calls and says, "Hey, Purif, you have to go to Mali," or how does that work?
Yeah, it's exactly like that, except it's not the Secretary General at that time, Kofi Annan. Ban Ki-moon. It was not him, but yeah, that's how it works. And you have a minimum of 72 hours to get prepared. In this case, it was, you know, as I was sent already in 2013 for the implementation, to help the implementation, actually to organize the implementation body, of the following up body of the implementation of the agreement, they asked me to go back. So in 2014, which means that at that time I had already a good knowledge of Mali, having followed very clearly, very nearly the implementation of the WAGA agreement. And it was it was not 72 hours, but it was very, very short. So yeah, you get prepared, you call a lot, grasp some notes, try to be as much updated as you can, so that when you touch ground in Mali, you are fully operational. That's the idea of the standby team.
Mm-hmm. So in your situation, at least for the second part of the process, for the 2015 agreement, you were already an expert on Mali, but I guess others are not. If they have 72 hours, they come in situations where they don't know much or maybe nothing about the situation except for what they can read in the 72 hours between all the other things they have to prepare. And that makes me think about two approaches in mediation. So some say you have to be an expert.
Exactly.
On the field you're working on. Others say, no, you have to be totally naive. You come in, you have to ask the stupid questions because that's where things come out. So what do you think?
These two approaches are very clear, very exist. But I think a naive approach is correct for commercial and civil mediation. When it comes to political mediation, if you arrive being naive, you just lost before to start. So I don't know. I do teach this second approach, but in civil and commercial and trade mediation, not in political mediation. Yeah. And so you need to be prepared and you need to have a conflict analysis. If you show the effective guidance of UN governance of mediation, this leaflet, if you show it again, the first element is the conflict analysis. It's a key. So if you are naive, you can't do a conflict analysis. No. But this being said, you must realize that it really depends on the peace processes. Sometimes a mediation Sherpa is sent to be the Sherpa, the mediation Sherpa of a team who knows everything about the conflict already, but doesn't know about mediation. So you are there just to help on the mediation part. Sometimes you are the mediator. So you need not only to know mediation, but to know the actors, the conflict, the causes and everything. So it really depends from process to process. But in political mediation, for me, just don't believe you may arrive as a naive, you're lost.
No. So you will be manipulated by everybody.
Or you could even do worse than better, thinking to do your job, but you're not knowing where you put the foot or the feet. Yeah. And you could be very harmful by doing that.
Yeah, indeed. Right. So then you get that call, you prepare yourself, you got maybe briefing or put your notes or whatever. Then you arrive locally, and then who welcomes you at the airport?
A driver, a UN driver. If I remember, it was a UN driver and someone of the political unit of the MINUSMA. The MINUSMA, la mission intégrée de soutien au Mali des Nations Unies, is still today the UN mission in Mali. And we have been very immediately starting to work with the Secretary General Special Representative, who was the chef de la MINUSMA and who was mandated by Ban Ki-moon to start this second step, this second phase of the mediation, since the Ouagadougou agreement had taken place, the presidential election had taken place, electing Ibeka, Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta. We are in 2013. And then in 2014, we need to resume the negotiation between government and rebel groups. And that's where the Algiers process started.
And how works the team? I mean, more in terms of preparation of the process now. How does it work in terms of first steps? So I guess there's a mediation team, there are some technical experts, mediation experts. How many people are on that team? What do they do? Do they get to, I don't know, get to know each other first, or do they work in the same office, same building?
Okay, there is no rule. So every process is different. In this case, there was no real agreement on who would lead the process. It was clear that it was not going to be ECOWAS or Burkina Faso anymore. Ouagadougou is the capital city of Burkina Faso. It was President Kampaoré who was leading the mediation, but it was clear it was not going to be the same pattern anymore. Mm-hmm. Algeria wanted to lead the mediation, as it led already previous mediation exactly between the government of Mali and rebel groups, each time with success of an agreement and failure of implementation of this agreement. Mm. This pattern has repeated itself 2-3 times since the independence.
Well, not only on that process, I guess.
Sorry?
Not only on that situation. I think that's recurrent in, you know, around the world.
Yeah. But I'm talking about Mali. So
sure.
Algeria wanted again to resume a new mediation, being leading it. At the same time, the UN wanted to lead the mediation. They were in the, let's say, co-pilot seat for the WAGA agreement, and they wanted to be again leading or co-leading the Algiers process. But at the end of the day, and to cut a long story short, Algeria has been leading the process, and it was an 11-member mediation team, 11 countries or international organizations, which is a lot. As you can imagine, the room was pretty crowded. It was not easy. It was not easy to, you had all the surrounding Sahelian countries, plus Nigeria, plus Chad, who are not neighboring Mali. So all the neighboring countries, plus Algeria, plus Nigeria, plus Chad, plus international organization, the AU, the EU, UN, obviously, the ECOWAS, the Islamic organization, 11 members. Mm-hmm. And so we were all in Algiers coordinating ourselves, but you can imagine that the coordination of the 11 member mediation is already taking time.
Yeah, exactly.
Because not all the members were on the same page. That's clear. That's clear.
And what's the profile of those 11 members? Are they all mediators that leave some exposure, or they're more technical experts, or what's?
Well, the problem is that it has been called a mediation process, but it was not a mediation process. It was an international diplomatic conference. You could maybe say that it has been a very twisted arm mediation. If you want to use the word mediation to describe that process, then maybe that is what could come the nearest, a very strongly twisted arm mediation, but it was not really a mediation. Mm. We did not use the tools of the mediation, very rarely, to say so, very rarely. So it was quite a frustrating for a mediation expert, but at the same time, that was my role and my African Union colleague role, who was also a mediation Sherpa. Our role was really to try to convince our bosses and and after them, the mediation, the 11 member mediation, and especially Algeria, to use the mediation tools, techniques, and principles and values. And we haven't been able to do it. We were only two, and we were not the leaders. You know, there were presidents and ministers and so, but we were trying to do what we could in order to curb sometimes the process into a more mediation type process. But it was very difficult. And this explains, by the way, even, and we will come back to the agreement, I believe it's a good agreement, but it explains why this agreement has not been implemented so far. It's because it has been a bottom-up approach. It has not emerged from the parties. We have not
top-down.
It has not emerged from the parties. We have not integrated the opposition, the civil society. We have not taken the time. We have not allowed ourselves to take the time for the parties to mature. And this is kind of thing we have faced in Algiers.
And was that a lack of consensus or lack of time, or what's the reason for that?
Two elements, in my view. The first was time. It was very clear at the end, and that's, I believe, what has provoked the Paras incident of 1st March. To stop the negotiation, to freeze the negotiation, to say, okay, this is the text and we will not change a comma, paraph it, explain it to your constituency and come back to sign it. This has been done against all rules of mediation. But again, we were not in a genuine mediation process, but this has been done because it was obvious that Algeria was more and more concerned by Libya, the crisis in Libya. Mm-hmm. We are in February, March 2015. And Algeria wanted to have more time and to be able to terminate this process in order to be available for Libya, which was very, very worrying for them, strategically speaking, as we all can understand. So lack of time is one. And the second element is, it was a diplomatic conference. It was not a mediation. So in mediation, you know that you need to give to have time in order to mature and to let the parties mature and to help them maturing. It needs time. It requests time. You know it and you give it. But we were not in a mediation process. So the awareness of how to bring the parties to really accept what they're going to sign was not there. It was the same old recipe of international diplomatic conference, where it's the mediator or the so-called mediator that comes with the text, who comes with the text, and not the party elaborating the text.
No, I see. Okay. So not only top down, but also like externally somehow.
Twisted armed. Well, you can say it, both, and the government and the rebel groups, both rebel groups. Well, the platform agreed on almost everything, but the government and the CMA were twisted armed. At the same, I mean, that does not mean that the government was, that the agreement was a bad agreement. The process was wrong. The agreement is a good agreement. I mean, this is my opinion. This is the UN opinion. This is the opinion of many, many, many local and international observers and actors. It is a good agreement, but the way to produce it has been wrong, and you're facing a key challenge. Even if you have a good agreement, if the parties have not themselves been convinced it's the good agreement, you need then to do the appropriation work I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that in 7 years, this appropriation work has not been done. Mm-hmm. And that's the situation we're facing today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a pity. So that's really an important point that you mentioned, that even with the good agreement, with important contents and what's actually supposed to be needed, if the people don't connect to it, doesn't work. So exactly. There is the, let's say, the technical part, the contents and so on, but there's the whole human part, the process, the local ownership and so on and so on.
And when you, exactly, Pascal, and when you say local ownership, it means the elite, the opposition, the media, the people. Mm-hmm. It means the different levels or layers of the society. Some are convinced, some are not.
Yeah.
And since we are talking of a country where there is 85% of illiteracy, it's so easy mm-hmm. to make believe people that the agreement is saying things that it does not say. Mm-hmm. And that's this dirty game that is going on for years now.
No.
Putting the country in real danger.
Are there any efforts now, especially on that level, to work more on the acceptance, the communication, the local ownership? Because we talked about the follow-up, the observatory, and so on and so on. But how about that part?
Well, the problem is that since we had the military coup, right. In August 20, and again, within the same regime or transition regime, a new coup in April, May 21. We are in a situation where, as I said before, members of the government and key members of the government, starting right with the prime minister, are opposed to this agreement, and they launched a concept of lecture intelligente of the agreement, which means to open the Pandora box. And some other people within the government are very much in favor of the agreement, and the job of the reconciliation and social cohesion ministry. And the minister is one of the four colonels who seized the power. And their jobs, together with the MARN, le mécanisme d'appui à la réconciliation nationale, is precisely to coordinate the implementation of the agreement. And the minister in charge of reconciliation is the minister in charge of coordinating this implementation. And he's really trying to, although, you see, his prime minister is not on the same page. So it's a very odd situation we are experiencing.
Indeed.
And when it comes to the head of the state, it's very unclear, if we can say, it's very unclear to know whether the president of the transition is very much in favor, against, or in between. And so, at the least, we can say there is a lack, there is an ambiguity. Mm-hmm. Maybe even some people say a constructed ambiguity, which is never good for an agreement.
No,
it's not good. If you want the bicycle to run properly again and to take some speed to prevent it to fall, you need to stop this ambiguity.
Mm-hmm. Right, complicated situation. Those are the challenges for the process and the implementation and so on. On a very personal note, so what were the biggest challenges for you? Were there moments where you, I don't know, totally fed up? You said, I don't know what to do with this. Or look, huge personal challenges. What would you say on a personal note for you as a mediator? What was the biggest challenge in all that?
Well, I'm pretty fortunate because it's quite rare. I have been following Mali for 9 years. During the peace, at the end of the, or for the implementation of the preliminary agreement, during the Algiers process and the 7 years of its implementation, which is very rare, and I'm very fortunate. And you can tell this is because I love Mali and I love the Sahel region. But really, it's very fortunate to have this long lasting view. And to answer your question, yeah, I had some moment of frustration during the process of Algiers when I saw how difficult it was for my EU colleague and me to uh, and At one stage, I had also a woman UN colleague, so we were at some stage three, to convince those diplomats, ministers, ambassadors to use the mediation tools if they wanted to have a sustainable agreement and a sustainable process, not to be put in the situation that we're living today. Mm-hmm. Because we knew as mediation professional, it's not difficult to understand that if you don't put the right basis, then you pay it sooner or later into the buy-in of the agreement, into the implementation of the agreement, etc. So that, yeah, I had some moment of frustration during the process. A beautiful moment during the process was when the process was about to collapse, I was sent to Nouakchott, the capital of Mauritania, where the CMA had flew after leaving Algiers after this Paraf incident of March 1st. Mm-hmm. And so it was really key for the mediation to bring the CMA back to the table. And so I have been asked to do that because I had built good relationship with the government as with the rebels, but also because I was a Belgian. Mm-hmm. And being a Belgian has been the opportunity to explain to those rebel groups that taking my own country as an example, that to go from a centralized country to a federal country, which they hoped, while the federalism was not at all in the agreement, it's to make them, and the regionalization is the key of the agreement, which is not as far as federalism, mm-hmm. and to make them understand, you know, it's an evolution. Rome has not been built in one day. A federal state, if this remains your dream, maybe, who knows, you're not going to get that in one day either. Mm-hmm. You need to be concentrated of what is doable today. And maybe tomorrow, the Malian state and you will find another kind of agreement. But at this stage, we're talking about regionalization. Focus on that. And it worked. And they came back to Algiers. And so that was, of course, a very beautiful moment.
Indeed.
And the same during the implementation, very good and very frustrating moment. And at the moment, well, you can probably see on what I'm saying that I'm a bit, I'm still hopeful. If you stop to be hopeful, you stop to be mediator. That's my deep belief. No, you don't need to be naive. It's not a naive hopefulness. There are reasons to believe. Mm. There are many reasons to be worried. Mm-hmm. And concerned, and I am worried and concerned, and I'm doing everything I can to try to convince people who could save the situation and prevent this bicycle to fall to do it. And so I'm still working on that.
And I guess also the signature events, the two, definitely the second one was also, you know, positive and happy events, I guess.
Yeah,
you called it the International Diplomatic Conference. So, but behind the picture, we can see in the press, you know, what, how did it happen? How did it go? How many people were there? Was it public? Was it private or semi-public? Or did people have lunch together? I mean, how can we imagine this type of event?
Very different. If you take the May signature of signature event and the June, the May is between the government and the so-called pro-government rebel groups. Mm-hmm. That means not really important as a signature. And that was a huge event. Many, many, many African head of states, at least 8, if not 10, or 12. I mean, a room crowded in Bamako, the biggest room of Bamako, actually, Centre de Conférence Internationale de Bamako. And it was nice. It was a nice, but for me and for many people, we knew we were experiencing something like a signature between the government and itself. So it was far from what we wanted. At the same time, we were trying to, at that time, to bring CMA back to the table. So the hope still existed, and we were hoping that the CMA would see this possibility of signature as a coronation. And so that happened 1 month later in June, when the CMA decided to join the agreement or to sign the agreement. And it was also in the same room, no head of states except Ibeka. And that was a very touching moment. For me, that was the most touching moment when Ibeka and MMA, Mouvement Arabe de l'Azawad, Secretary General, who was together with Ibeka on the scene. They both died today. Mm. And it was a very, very emotional moment where you believe really we know peace needs to be written and reconciliation even more, but this is a good start. And then they had the dinner. Everyone had been invited at the presidential palace after the signature in Bamako. It's La Colline du Pouvoir, as we call it in Bamako, at the presidential palace. And it was a very festive moment as well. And you must imagine that for many of those rebel groups, Arab and Tuareg rebel leaders, it was the first time for them to go back to Bamako after years. So it was also so symbolic, emotional and symbolic, yeah.
And a big relief, I guess, also for you as a mediator to see people there finally signing. And, you know, I guess, I don't know, you feel it emotionally in your body. I guess it's something like.
You feel the emotion and you say, I have been helpful. In something, in peace, in reconciliation, to help these people. I know Mali, I've been known Mali for 22 years now, since 2000. And so for me to be able to, and I like these people, I really love the country, love the people, love the culture, love the Sahelian culture. And for me to be able to do that, to help these people, this country to make peace with itself was a magnificent moment. We all knew that the difficulties comes later. Implementation of the agreement is the day after. It's the key. But you can't do an implementation if you don't have first an agreement. So we had
absolutely
an agreement. We had a preliminary agreement and then we had a final agreement. So it was a big moment indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And very interestingly is that the day after, or am I wrong? Was it the same day? No, I think it's the day after we had the first meeting of the CSA, le Comité de Suivi de l'Accord. So very rapidly after the festivities, go back to work, on the implementation phase, the day after starts.
Nice.
And
people were motivated, huh?
And people were very motivated, very much indeed, yeah. Mm.
So now today, as I understand, the motivation dropped a little bit. So how would you say, before we scroll through the agreement, and it's really, as you said, it's a good agreement. It has like details about political transition, security, economy, reconciliation, the observatory. So many things are in. It's really complete. Now the implementation is not up to the level it would be desired. So what would you say? What's the percentage of implementation?
It's very hard to do. The figure of 15% is a figure that you will meet. And it looks like, I don't think it is based on any real analysis, but it's a percentage that many actors are giving when they ask such a question. But it shows, you know, maybe it's not 15, but it shows you after 7 years how little is implemented. Mm-hmm. You said they were political and institutional, security, defense, economic, and justice reconciliation titles or chapters in the agreement. When it comes to the last one, I think La Vérité, La Commission Justice et Vérité, Justice et Réconciliation, the so-called CVJR, has done a good job and has been up to the end of its mandate. So in terms of reconciliation, a lot needs to be done, but one must salute the very good work of the CVJR, who has, unlike the other chapters, proceed in its jobs, and that really needs to be saluted. When it comes to the political part of the agreement, the transitional political provisions have been implemented. So in a waiting for a regionalization, which is between decentralization and federalism, if you want, more or less, in a waiting for this regionalization to be written into the constitution and then to be implemented, none of that has been done so far. But in awaiting that, the agreement were saying you need to take transitional steps. Those mm-hmm. steps have been done. Mm-hmm. But after 7 years, we are not further than that, while the agreement was saying after 6 months, 1 year, you need to go to elections, regional elections. Mm-hmm. So we are more than 6 years ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. In defense and security, which is a very hot topic as well, we have been very actively busy into the implementation of mixed battalion. The final idea is to have a recomposed, reintegrated national army where the Tuaregs and the Arabs, where the rebel groups would be integrated even on high level of the hierarchy, and the rest would be demobilized and reintegrated elsewhere in the civil society. That's the idea. Mm-hmm. But this reintegration and this recomposition of the army, l'armée recomposée, as the agreement is putting it, we're not far. We almost nowhere. We have done battalion of where the national army and the rebel groups are working together, one or two. It has not. It was a very good start, and then because of the situation, it was frozen and didn't go further than that. And as we say today, there are reintegration into the army. There are reintegration, but not in the scale that the agreement was putting it, and not in the top hierarchy. So obviously, there is still a huge lack of confidence between the parties to go to this goal of armée reconstituée, armée recomposée, mm-hmm. and demobilization of the rebel groups. Because as we speak, I would say the rebel groups are stronger than ever. And this is This is because we are 7 years later of the agreement, where the agreement was supposed to be implemented in 1.5 years. And so this lack of...
It was a bit optimistic, if I may say, I guess.
Absolutely.
1.5 years, you know.
No, it's absolutely true. And again, that was not mediation. That was imposed. That was imposed. The mediation said you have 3 months to do that, 6 months to do that, 9 months to do that. That's not how it works. But the problem is that then after so long, the confidence has dropped dramatically. And then the FAMA is rearming itself, and the rebel groups are rearming themselves as well.
Yeah.
And so everything is ready for confrontation. That was what I called chaos. And don't forget the jihadist in this picture, which is another party. Would be delighted to see the rebel groups. The rebels are not jihadists, they are political rebels, and the government fighting again together. That would be so nice for the jihadists to see that. Mm-hmm. So this is the chaos that needs to be absolutely avoided. But yes, the situation is preoccupying. Mm-hmm. And we need to put confidence back on the table, and to do that means the meeting to resume and the implementation work to resume.
So in terms of process for you, the meeting to resume and the trust coming back, that's the main priority in terms of process.
Yes, and in order to do that, as I said before, that's key. That's the first step. The second step, but in order to do that, the first step is to put an end to the ambiguity I was talking about. Okay. If the ambiguity remains, there will no be confidence, there will be no meetings. So if the ambiguity stops, if everyone says, okay, we go on basis of this agreement, then the work can be resumed. But as I said, with this principle of relecture intelligente of the agreement,
which means reading it my way, I guess.
Well, that's exactly what
who defines intelligence.
What the parties are telling to the other. When you say relecture intelligente, means read it my way. But I won't be able to read it my way, and you won't be able to read it my way.
It is a collective reading.
Exactly. And so if we need to take a collective reading, then let's take the reading of the agreement as we sign it both. Because that's the only collective reading we can have. And that's exactly what Observateur Indépendant is saying.
Maybe let's slowly come to an end for the exchange, but just I have just one or two technical questions. So also in the agreement, there are plenty of annexes, you know, about the roads to be built and so on. Why annexes? Why is it not part of the agreement? Is it that it can be adapted if needed more easily than the whole agreement, or why putting annexes?
Very good question, Pascal. And actually, they are part of the agreement. There are annexes, but one of the very, very last provision of the agreement is saying the annexes are part of the agreement and have the same status as the provision of the agreement themselves.
Okay.
So it's just to go far into the details and also into the transitional part of the agreement, but those details and transitional part are fully part of the agreement, have the same value as a provision of the agreement. And it is said explicitly. That's the modus operandi that we have chosen to write this agreement.
Just not to make it too heavy and to have it. Okay. Good. Yeah, Pierre-Yves. Merci beaucoup. Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. My pleasure.
That was really fascinating to hear from really firsthand and to understand the process a bit better. I mean, technically, but also and particularly, I would say, from the point of a mediator who was involved so closely. It was fascinating discussion. My last question is, how do you remain involved on all that?
Remain involved?
Yeah, how do you want? I guess, yes.
Well, I mean, I told you I like Mali and Malians. I don't want to leave on an unfinished business. and I the Sahel.
That's a good spirit.
The Sahel is clearly on top of the agenda of many people today because it's a dangerous, explosive area in our little blue planet. And so, yes, it's. I want to remain involved because I remain realistically optimistic, and peace is there, and it's still doable. It's absolutely reachable, I'm trying to help, and I hope to be able to help with other people. Of course, we are so many to be active in Sahel in order to achieve peace and reconciliation.
Yeah, thank you. Very nice closing words. Peace, the peace is there, which is sometimes it's not visible, or we need to dig it out, but it's always there. I'm very much convinced of that as well. So that's a real mediator spirit.
It's in our reach. It's in their reach.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pascal. Thank you. I'll
talk to you soon.
Okay, though. Bye-bye now.